United States against Gaia. Mr. Brindley.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. My name is Beau Brindley, and I represent defendant appellant Salvador Rosales. Unless there's questions about the facts of the case, the first issue I would like to discuss briefly is the government's claim of waiver in this case. The government's claim of waiver comes from one basis only, and that's a question the district court actually asked about whether a motion for mistrial based on a Rule 16 violation was moot. That was a completely separate issue from the Sixth Amendment issue. The court didn't reference the Sixth Amendment issue and could not give rise to an intentional relinquishment of the right to appeal that issue. With respect to the question of whether there was, in fact, a violation of the Sixth Amendment,
it does suggest the lawyer wasn't particularly worried about the problem, doesn't it?
The government's brief suggests that because the phone records were excluded, that would somehow render the issue one that the counsel didn't want to further persist on.
That's a slightly separate point. The lawyer himself didn't seem to be disturbed in having lost this opportunity to talk to his client.
Well, the lawyer was me, Your Honor, and I was concerned. I actually raised the issue again in the morning requesting time to discuss these issues with my client. The real issue here is the right to consult with counsel during an overnight recess pursuant to the Sixth Amendment is not my right. It's the right of the defendant. And I intended to talk to him. The court's order and the breadth of its order made it impossible for the defendant to provide to me information that he wanted to provide about factual issues made relevant by the testimony during the day, which Getter says he has a right to do. His right was abridged.
This is discussion not related to the phone records?
It would have been facts that may have been, it would have been factual issues that he thought were relevant based on his testimony, some of which may have related to the phone records, and some of which may have related to other substantive issues. He wanted to direct all kinds of questions and issues to counsel. The counsel did not answer because the court had ordered him not to and had told counsel what to say to his client, that he couldn't discuss substantive issues with him. That's what I was told. That's what I told my client. So he was unable to discuss any of those things. With respect to whether it is a Sixth Amendment violation, the language of the order from the district court in this case is identical essentially to the language of the order in Santos, which was found to violate the Sixth Amendment. The only difference the government cited is the fact that in Santos the witness had been tendered for cross versus in this case cross had begun. However, Your Honor, the defendant's interest during an overnight recess and his right to consult with counsel about areas of inquiry that had not been fully realized before, that right is not impacted by whether it's the same whether it's after tender or during cross. And so the government's distinction doesn't change the fact this is an identical order to Santos. So then we come to the question of whether this violation of the Sixth Amendment was a structural error or whether it was some error to which the prejudice standard applies. And here, I think the Getter's case answers the question. Because in this case, the court ruled that we could not...
But you're over-reading Santos, which did not decide whether denial of consultation between a recess was in itself reversible error.
Right.
You pointed out there were other elements of prejudice.
Santos found an error but didn't determine whether it was reversible or not. What Santos did say, however, was the prejudice of the error was not going to be possible to estimate, is what Santos indicated. And because of that, Your Honor, when you look at Gonzalez-Lopez says you have structural errors when you have cases in which the prejudice is difficult or impossible to estimate, which this court indicated about an identical error in Santos.
Yeah, but then you have this trivial violation rule, right? It's all.
There's a triviality case
in the Second Circuit.
I mean,
trivial should just mean is no prejudice, right?
But that's the Second Circuit's issue. But this case is roughly equivalent to Getters. And the reason I say is because we have an overnight recess. And the court said we couldn't discuss anything relating to the substance of his testimony. This is a defendant who had been testifying for hours. Any factual issue we wanted to discuss would have been related to the substance of his testimony. Any kind of evidence we wanted to discuss that might be admitted would be related to the substance of his testimony. Moreover, the court told me specifically what I was supposed to say to him and what I could say to him, and that was that we couldn't talk to him. And as a result of that, Your Honor, we were roughly equivalent to Getters, which was a full deprivation, and the Supreme Court says that Getters is a structural error case, and that this would be a structural error. Moreover, Your Honor, if we...
Has the Supreme Court ever said or even suggested that it's a defendant and his lawyer are entitled to talk to one another during cross-examination and about the cross-examination?
The court
Getters has some dicta that cuts the opposite way, does it not?
The Getters court said that after he'd been tendered for cross, he had the right to discuss with counsel issues related to strategy, which could touch on the substance of his testimony.
Other than the cross-examination.
But maybe to some extent Getters says that there is an interest in the government. But the cases and the Supreme Court has definitively said that whenever there's a conflict between the government's interest in cross and the defendant's right to consult with his counsel during an overnight recess, that has to be resolved in favor of the Sixth Amendment. And due to that, Your Honor, we believe this was a structural error and the case should be reversed. I reserve any remaining time. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Nash.
Thank you, Judge. May it please the Court, I represent Mr. Gaya. His issue is rather simple. On October 25th, 07, he asked for a new lawyer. Judge Anderson said that he would arrange for him to meet with a new lawyer so that they could be on the same wavelength and not go through a series of lawyers. On November 10th, he appeared in court. The judge said, Mr. Clark will represent you. He didn't come to court again until April the 10th when the jury selection was set. The 29th of April, he told his lawyer that he wanted a new lawyer, essentially that they couldn't get along. There was a lack of communication. On the 30th of April, the jury was picked. Nothing was said. Counsel didn't report that to the court. And the next time they were in court, he asked to speak to the judge through the marshal. The marshal informed the judge that Mr. Gaya wanted a new lawyer. The court called Mr. Gaya before it and said, Mr. Gaya, you have Mr. Clark or you're pro se. It's too late. He repeated that option to him again, and then later in the colloquy said that if you want, you can plead guilty. There was no inquiry regarding the reason for the request other than oblique request after the fact, after the court had told Mr. Gaya that he had no choice but to proceed with Mr. Clark or go pro se. And an inarticulate defendant explained that their strategies for going forward were different. If Your Honor looks at the cases...
Should have figured that out earlier.
Pardon me, Judge?
Should have come to that conclusion earlier.
We would think so as we stand here, but the record is so devoid of what, if any, contact the lawyer and the client had. We accept
there has to be a strong presumption that if the client has had the lawyer for a significant period of time, he can't request a new lawyer with the day the trial begins.
Well, actually, he requested on the 29th when he tells the lawyer, and actually in the time that the timeliness is judged by when the difference of opinion comes to be, and I suppose upon further inquiry, what's the basis of that lack of communication? But here we have a record devoid of anything because the district court didn't make any inquiry, if you look at the inquiry that's made in McKenna and the lack of inquiry made in Riles, Riles' approving of McKenna, you see the difference. And there, this court, the reviewing court, could judge that the lack of communication was not so great that the case couldn't go ahead. In Harris, another case, which the government cites, the court said that it was not the model of probity. It was greater than there was in this case, because in this case, the inquiry is somewhat perfunctory at best, because Judge Olson says immediately, it's pro se or Clark. It's pro se or Clark. It's too late. You can plead guilty if you want. And then the brief inquiry of Mr. Gaia comes absolutely clear that he's inarticulate and quite unable to explain it beyond what he does. And there's no further inquiry. The other thing that's somewhat telling here is the district judge is telling Mr. Gaia, this is a fine lawyer. He has a lot of experience. I have confidence in his qualification and his abilities. He's been doing this for a long time. The government cites that also, and then, as
was
it should...
Was that wrong?
Pardon me?
Was that incorrect?
Are you asking me my judgment of Mr. Clark?
Yes.
No. Yes, it is wrong, Judge. I don't know what that can play in it, but yes, it is wrong. And I think it's wrong for the court to be telling him that this is a great lawyer, that the government cites what a great job he does in cross-examination. Everybody's perfecting the verdict, protecting the calendar, and poor Mr. Gaia, who's told, I'll get you a lawyer so you can be on the same wavelength, he never comes to court. He's not there the only other time they appear in court in the meantime. He's out in the cold. We don't have any idea how long, how many times, what they discussed, if they ever met. We can assume some of it, but we can't assume it to the extent that there shouldn't have been an inquiry. And if you look at the inquiry in McKenna, and you look at what the court said in Riles about that and the lack of inquiry in Riles, this case should be reversed because of the lack of inquiry. If there are no questions, Judge, I'll save a little bit for rebuttal. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you, Counsel. Mr. Laud.
May it please the Court, Raj Laud on behalf of the United States. Your Honors, with respect to Defendant Gaia, I think it is important to be clear there was an inquiry into the defendant's reasons. The Court's initial statement may have been, you can go by yourself, you can go with Clark, but then the Court did inquire into the reasons, and I think what's telling about those reasons is they are not things that happened in the days before the trial was to begin. It was a dispute about considering a guilty plea, and it was the defendant was concerned that his attorney had asked for information about the government's key witness in this case, the cooperating witness. Gaia was in court on April 10th, roughly 3 weeks before trial began, at which point one would imagine these issues would have begun to percolate, and there was no indication he wanted a new attorney. And we do know in the end he did say, I will go with Clark, and that's the waiver argument that's made in the brief. Turning to Defendant Rosales, what's important about the waiver argument to understand is that at every step of the inquiry, there was one issue before the court. It was the phone records. What happened is the government sought to use the phone records on cross-examination, and defense counsel objected, at which point it was late in the day and the court said, I want to consider this overnight. We'll take up the issue in the morning. And don't talk to your client about the phone records until the morning. The next morning, the court said, I'm still not ready to rule on the admissibility of the phone records, so don't talk to your client about that issue now, and the government won't ask questions about that on cross-examination. At the time, the defendant was asked, does this moot out the motion for a mistrial? The court had addressed the issue of whether the phone records would be admitted and actually decided to exclude the phone records, and then the Sixth Amendment issue was never addressed again. So at each step of the way, they were treated as one inquiry. And just to be clear, there's nothing in the record to suggest that the defendant and his counsel wished to confer about any issue other than the phone records. In fact, the motion, the memorandum of law that was filed overnight asks specifically for the relief of being allowed to discuss the phone records with counsel. On the merits, I just want to make the point that this order in context is narrower than the order in Santos, because it was in the midst of cross-examination, and not just in the middle of cross-examination, but immediately before a specific issue was going to be discussed. In Santos, it was before cross-examination was to begin, and the whole range of the direct testimony or other issues in the case would likely to be discussed. And just turning to harmless error briefly.
But your opponent says that what the judge said prevented any kind of discussion that they might have had overnight, wholly unrelated to the phone records.
Well, Your Honor, the defendant never requested, and his attorney was specific in requesting what he wanted, the ability to talk to his client about other issues. He asked specifically, can he talk about the phone records, and the court says, not about the substance of the testimony. You can say that there's an issue about the phone records. So this is a case, and I think this goes to the harmless error question as well, where we do know what defendant and his attorney wish to discuss, and we do know that it doesn't cast any doubt on the outcome of the proceeding here. The remedy that the defendant got was a strong one, stronger actually than conferring with his attorney about the records, which is that the phone records were excluded from cross-examination. The government didn't have the opportunity to use the records. And as the court mentioned earlier, Santos does not resolve the question of whether this error can be harmless. But
the judge said, don't discuss the substance of his testimony with him, including this being the phone records. So it is broader, and his argument is, well, maybe there were other things they would have talked about.
Your Honor, and I agree, that statement alone is broader, but I would say the discussion leading up to it, the request that counsel makes overnight, and the fact that he allows this issue to then be passed over in silence once the phone records are excluded, shows that here that discussion would have been focused on the records, and there's no indication that it affected the outcome. I would also say, with regard to the harmless error argument, that in addition to the fact that discussion wouldn't have changed the outcome, the evidence here was overwhelming and did include the defendant's own admission on the stand that he was involved in one of the transactions. There were recordings. There was extensive testimony by a cooperating witness of the government. And there were 4 kilograms of cocaine found in a car that the defendant had. There was testimony that the defendant had been seen driving in an apartment building owned by the defendant. If the court has no further questions for these reasons and the reasons in our brief, I would ask that this court affirm the convictions and sentences of both defendants. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Laud. Mr. Brindley, anything further?
Yes, Your Honor. Your Honor, the court's ruling.
When the judge said that, don't discuss the substance, including this, shouldn't you have asked for clarification? Because probably the judge was talking about the phone records, and you could have asked him, say, well, can I discuss issues unrelated to the phone records?
Well, what I did try to ask for clarification, Your Honor. I asked him, well, can I explain to him what's going on? I asked him on two occasions essentially what I could say.
Put aside the phone records. Did you say, well, I know, I'm not gonna, you don't want me to say anything touching on the phone records, but can we discuss other issues?
I didn't ask it that way. What the court told me was essentially what I could tell him. He gave me two times a statement I could make to him.
No, I think you obviously have an ambiguity. There's a focus on the phone records.
But we're even.
And then the judge goes further. Now, there wasn't any apparent reason for the judge to go further, which suggests that he was just misspeaking. If he really did want to talk to your client about something, why you should have asked for a clarification. Otherwise, you're sandbagging the judge. You know, this is all oral. People say things imprecisely, and Lawyers are constantly asking judges to clarify what their ruling is.
Well, Your Honor,
do you really mean I can't do this, I can't do that?
Perhaps I should have been more specific.
Yeah,
maybe you should have been. But
that's what I'm saying.
Nonetheless, the defendant had a right to.
Nonetheless, I don't get the nonetheless. Look, the lawyer represents the lawyer represents the client, and if he does a bad job, then. You don't reverse. You may have some post-conviction business about ineffective assistance, but
Your Honor, the defendant had a right to discuss certain things with me overnight.
So why didn't you tell the judge, look, you know, judge, okay, I understand, no phone records, but my client has a right to talk to me about anything else.
I asked the judge to clarify, and he told me what I could say to him. I said that to him. I felt that was the best I could do. I filed a memorandum.
Well, why didn't you say what I just said?
Because I didn't use those words. I probably should have, but I didn't,
Judge.
Yeah,
you should have. Right.
But I didn't use those words. Not only did I file a memorandum in the morning, I asked for time to discuss with him so he could give me whatever information he wanted, any issues related to the phone records and the substance of his testimony.
Well, they're back to the phone records.
But we had already cited that the prevention of talking about the substance was a problem because he told me what I could say. And I told the defendant exactly what he said. There was no way we could discuss anything else based on that ruling, and that makes this equivalent to Getters. Thank you, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Brindley. Any further, Mr. Nash?
Everybody in my position, Judge, very brief. The government made one important statement. It said that the defendant was in court on April 10th, and one assumes that the lack of communication would have surfaced by that time. In its brief on page 23 in the first full paragraph, it says there is nothing in the record to indicate that there was a total lack of communication. The fact is there's nothing in the record, and you can't assume that it surfaced before then. We know that it surfaced on the 29th. The client told the court that he had told the lawyer that he needed a new lawyer on the 29th. We have no idea that it surfaced before that. We have no idea that they even met, how many times they met, or if they discussed anything. The lack of the record here
is what's important.
Thank you, Judge.
And Mr. Nash, we appreciate your willingness to accept the appointment and your assistance to the court as well as your client. The case is taken under advisement.